This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
Well, good morning, everyone. And particularly to family and friends who have come here this morning to witness and be in support of these new bodhisattvas. So this is a precept ceremony, Jukai. Kai are the precepts. Ju means to receive. And so these students have been practicing and training for some years. And in our tradition, a student has to be a trained student for at least a couple of years and then request for the precepts. It's not an automatic thing. It needs to be something that comes from within the heart of the student, because the student is taking vows, and that's a very personal thing. It's a commitment. It's joyful because it means there's someone who wants to really commit themselves to bringing forth benefit into the world. And there's a solemnity to it because it's not always so easy. And vows in Buddhism are very important because we're internally, there's a resolve, and we're bringing forth a very strong intention to live by these precepts, which means that very vow is creating an action, and that action has consequences. And it has consequences within the practitioner and within those around them. And so it's really recognizing that we all have influence in our lives, in the world. No one is without influence. And it's being very, not just thoughtful and intentional, but being a student of the Dharma. So how, if I want to stop causing trouble in my life and in the world, how do I do that? It's not at all unusual that we have come to resolves to not fall into some behavior or speech pattern again, and then we do. And so it's clear that just being willful or sincerely intent is not enough. We actually need a way to practice those impulses that tend to cause trouble. Certainly from a Buddhist perspective, and I think even a fairly aware person inside or outside of Buddhism can look or sort of scan the landscape today and see that amidst all of the different forms of conflict and struggle that we see in our country, in our neighborhoods, in our families, in the world, that at the basis of all of that is morality. A moral clarity that is all too often lacking. And not just a clarity, but an action of a living embodiment of that clarity. Because clarity itself is not yet active. And so how do we embody a moral clarity? Well, how do we cultivate a moral clarity? Well, we have to, at the same time that we're trying to bring that forth, we have to become very aware of, in a sense, adept at seeing the ways in which we are not morally clear. And then the ways we think and speak and act out of that lack of clarity and the consequences of that. And so that's kind of what Buddhism is about. And so these students today are taking these vows that are all about that. Right? It's a commitment not to being perfect, not to being saints, not to being morally without error, but to be resolved and committed to doing one's best, to live within Buddhism, within the Dharma, which is a moral clarity in and of itself, and to take responsibility, to be accountable to ourselves when we don't, and to be responsible to others when we don't. So that we're both taking responsibility for ourselves and others. The Bodhisattva vow is to, in a sense, very simply, to do whatever we can every day in any moment to alleviate any and every form of suffering that we see in the world, within ourselves, within others, and to bring about the greatest amount of good, to be a benefit. So our lives, rather than contributing to more chaos, more conflict, more confusion, means we have to deal with our own conflict, our own confusion, bring that into clarity, so then we can genuinely bring forth good. These precepts are based in the Buddha's enlightenment, in which he realized that all things are free of any fixed quality or characteristic. That includes these precepts. It includes every Buddhist teaching. And that means everything is in and of itself liberated. It's not bound. It's not constricted in and of itself. We, in our minds, constrict things, ourselves and others. So the students will now come and do a series of bows. First, they'll bow to the Buddha on the altar, which is a way of recognizing, expressing gratitude to our original teacher. And the origin, not of morality, but of these particular teachings and the way they've been transmitted, passed down generation after generation to us here this morning. There's lots of practice and training and liturgy that is constantly reminding us of giving and receiving, that we're always in a mutually dependent relationship with others. And now they'll do a series of bows to their parents. So this is recognizing their blood lineage, their family lineage. So if their parents are here, they'll do the bows directly to them. And if not, they'll go into the Buddha hall and bow into the direction in which they're living, or if they're deceased, where they're buried. So then we have these three streams: the original teacher, the Buddha, the parents, the family lineage, without which none of us would be here, of course, and without whose benefit we would not have been able to develop ourselves in such a way that we, and in particular these students, have come to the Dharma and are on the threshold of making these commitments, these vows. In that sense, we can all also appreciate that we are indebted to the original peoples of this land, the Munsee, the Lenape, the Mohican, who took care of these lands for thousands and thousands of years before they were taken away, exiled. And now they'll bow to the precepts teacher, which today is myself. One of the Buddha's most important teachings is spoken of as dependent origination, which can be complex in its depth and breadth, but in a sense speaks to the inescapable mutual dependence that we have with each other and everyone, which means we must be responsible to ourselves, and we are responsible to each other. Often we don't take that responsibility for ourselves and others, and then things go bad, to put it simply. So first we'll begin with the invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. The Buddha is the Shakyamuni Buddha, our original teacher, but all enlightened masters, and because we all have Buddha nature, all human beings. The Dharma, taking refuge in the Dharma, is the teachings of the Buddha and all enlightened teachings coming down to us. But those teachings are pointing to the original nature of every living thing and every inanimate thing. So all things are dharmas. And the Sangha is traditionally the practicing community of the Buddha. But because all beings have Buddha nature, all beings are seeking ultimately peace, as we are, all beings are Sangha. So to invoke the three treasures are both within this sort of Buddhist community, can be understood, but also all-inclusive. And I'll do this in both Japanese to honor our lineage, as well as in English. Everyone, please gassho. And you're in Seiza. Namu jipo butsu namu jipo ho namu jipo so namu hanshi shakyamuni butsu namu daisy dai hi ku ku kanze om bosa namu dajin fugen bosa namu dajin manju shri bosa namu koso joyo daishi namu taiso josa daishi namu riki daiso shibo satsu. Being one with the Buddha in the 10 directions, be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions, be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions, be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva, be one with Koso Joyodaishi, be one with Taiso Josadaishi, be one with the successive great ancestors, Namu Jipo Butsu Namu Jipo Ho Namu Jipo So Namu Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu Namu Dai Zidai Kyu Ku Kanze Om Bosa Namu Dajin Fugen Bosa Namu Dajin Manjushri Bosa Namu Koso Joyo Daishi Namu Taiso Josai Daishi Namu Riki Daiso Shibo Satsu. Next is the Gath of Atonement. Because we all in our lives at different times create harm. We do things with our thoughts, words, and actions that are injurious to ourselves and to others. And so from the very beginning of the Buddhist path, the Buddha realized if we don't atone, if we don't attend to those, they'll just accumulate. And the karmic burden of those, the way we carry the regret, the remorse, shame within us over things that we haven't done because we haven't found a way to, in a sense, transform that energy into something constructive and positive. And so the Buddha gave us this practice so that we could take responsibility for those actions, reflect on them, and then transform that into some constructive intention, some constructive action today. And now all of that guilt and remorse is moving forward. And so this is a very important practice for us as practitioners, and we'll do it here today all together. Everyone is invited. And you know, the basis of Buddhism, in a certain sense, transcends Buddhism itself. Buddhism is a vehicle. It's the tradition by which these teachings and practices come down to us. But what they're really all pointing to is humanity, human nature, human experience, a human life. And so in that way, they really, I mean, a lot of the language, of course, is Buddhism, is Buddhist. But what it's all pointing to really is all of humanity. So in that way, it really cuts across any tradition, any belief system, for that matter, if there's a little bit of openness. So we'll do this in a call and response. So please. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born in my body, mouth, and thought. Committed by me since of old.
All evil karma committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. peace. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Committed by me since of old.
All evil karma committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born in my body, mouth, and thought. Buddha taught that karma is intentional action. So when we have an intention, which is an expressed desire, and we act on it through our thoughts, words, and actions, that has consequence. And the consequence has a moral weight to it. It helps, it doesn't help. It brings patience, compassion, kindness, tolerance. It brings division, anger, hatred, fear. And so the Buddha said, in order to practice our lives, and this again really goes beyond Buddhism, we have to recognize the cause that our actions are causal and they have consequences. If we want to change the stream in which we're in that is not bringing us ultimate contentment and fulfillment, then we have to recognize and attend to those things that we're doing that are thwarting our very desires and efforts. And so karma in Buddhism is extremely important. He said it's not possible to liberate ourselves without understanding karma, and that karma is a profoundly complex phenomenon. In Buddhism, it's considered immutable. It's intrinsic to the human experience of the world. It's not a choice of whether I'm subject to it or not. And so in this Gatha of Atonement, we're recognizing all the karma that we've ever committed, including the teaching of rebirth. It means going back, you know, multiple lifetimes. And so evil is a very powerful word. We might think, well, I even don't act evil in an evil way. But in a Buddhist sense, if I've had countless lifetimes, then I have assuredly shown up in lifetimes and lived in very, very egregious ways. And so I'm really taking responsibility, atoning for all and anything that I've ever done, because of my greed, anger, and ignorance, born of body, mouth, and thought. And to atone for it is to take responsibility. So now that I am free of excusing or blaming or denying or suppressing, now I can transform that. Because nothing is fixed, everything is workable. Aspurging is not purification, but the mind is pure from the beginning, but rather a a living action that is the mind of the Buddha is your mind. Same mind. Through water, simple water from the belly of this beautiful mountain, and a simple pine bough. Now, having invoked the three treasures, we will take refuge. Take refuge is one of the most important and ancient practices of Buddhism. It's what makes everything that we do, everything that you have been doing in your study of the precepts, in receiving and practicing them within Buddha Dharma. And so to take refuge, as Master Dogen said, is to unreservedly rely upon. What kind of trust is that? We don't give that casually. without study and examination. That's why it takes time to get to this point. So that the sense of taking refuge and the practice of taking refuge, you have and are developing that faith that this is both Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, something that you relate to, that you draw from. Thank you. That you are receiving, but it's also something that in every moment you are yourself. And in that way, it's nothing outside. I'll do this twice in Japanese and once in English. And when we do it in English, again, we'll do this call and response, and so everyone can take refuge, or invited to. Okay, everyone, please go show. Namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so ki butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukyo kiye hokyo kiye so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha,
the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
Kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukyo kiye hokyo kiye so kyo. Will you maintain this?
I vow to take refuge in the three treasures.
In our meetings this week, I mentioned that when we are strong and clear in our practice, we are taking refuge. When we waver and things grow dim, we are becoming distant from the three treasures. It's a fundamental practice. So this is the beginning of the precepts, the three treasures. It's your body and mind. It's the whole of Buddha Dharma. It's the whole of this earth and everything in it. And really to train and study in such a way that over time we begin to appreciate and realize that more and more. In Buddhism, there's nothing outside of this. So in that way, Buddhism isn't and should never be a kind of a boundary between ourselves and others. The next is the pure precepts. The pure precepts are sort of the foundational fundamentals of morality in Buddhism. How does an enlightened being live? In their mind, in their body, in their actions, in their thoughts, in their decisions, in their relationships, all throughout. The first of the pure precepts is to not create evil. Joking. To not create evil tells us right away that evil, anything that's harmful that exists in the world, is a creation. Evil in Buddhism doesn't just exist as a force in the world that's somehow floating out there. It's in us. If we create it, we bring it forth with our mind, we act upon it with our words and actions. We don't have to. And so in this way, it's both acknowledging our capacity and too often our propensity to create harm, but it really brings it home. It says, look internally, see your mind. There you'll find the source. And it helps us to also cultivate compassion for others, because we realize when we create harm, that's arising out of things that we're bound up in. When other people create harm, they are bound up too. And so it helps us to understand and not narrow an action down to be the person, not to solidify an action into ourselves or another, but realize it's an action. And so to not create evil, Dogen said, this is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Will you maintain this vow?
I vow to not create evil.
Okay. The second pure precept is to practice good. And as I mentioned to you, what I love about these pure precepts, and it took me time to appreciate them because they seemed so simple. And because the great precepts are more specific, as we'll see, because they direct our attention to specific ways of acting, which makes it easier in a way to recognize those actions we need to notice. But the beauty of the precepts is because they're not so specific. They're not vague or ambiguous. But they're not, they don't apply themselves to a particular form of expression, which means in all times, in all places, try to the best of our ability to not create harm. In all times, in all places, within every situation, to the best of our ability, try to bring forth something that's beneficial. So practice good is just that. For whom? At what time? In what situation? It doesn't specify. That means every time, every situation. It's just a fundamental way of being in the world. It's like waking up with the thought and the intention, how can I be a benefit today? It also means very specifically to practice good is to practice the precepts, to live by these teachings, these vows. Master Dogen said, this is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi, perfect unexcelled enlightenment. It's the fundamental teaching. This is the way of all Buddhas. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And the third of the pure precepts is to actualize good for others. So the first can be practiced when no one's looking, no one's around. But you're practicing good, you're bringing forth something beneficial. The third is to ensure that it's actually benefiting others. When I was in high school, I worked in a couple of veterinary hospitals, and I worked with one doctor who was amazing with animals, not so good with people. And so to actualize good for others means every other, of course, fundamentally human beings, but every living thing. And in that sense, every inanimate thing. Just actualize good for all the living creatures of the world. Dogen said, this is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. Will you maintain this?
Actualize good for others.
And others means all others. So the vow that we take is to try and bring benefit to those that we love, that we care about, that we naturally want to actualize good for, but also those we struggle with. People we don't like, people we might hate, people who have harmed us. So there's a essential aspect of Buddhism and Buddhist practice that if we want to free ourselves, we have to shift a mentality that it can get embedded in blaming and making excuses and sort of externalizing. And that doesn't deny that people cause harm and they cause us harm. And that needs to be addressed. It's not ignoring that. But that the thing that we each can do, the place, in a sense, the seat of our greatest influence is everything that we find within ourselves. And so as long as we're not taking responsibility for our own thoughts, words, and action, for our own karma, for our own path and liberation, then it really will be somebody else's problem, somebody else's fault. And that never leads to any lasting, ultimate fulfillment. So this is a revolution, right? So now the grave precept. So how do you not create evil? How do you practice good? How do you actualize good for others? An old teaching says that this is something that a 3-year-old child can do, but even an 80-year-old adept will still have to practice diligently. And so the grave precepts, as I said, bring our attention to the fundamental ways. They're not inclusive of every way we can cause harm, but the fundamental ways karmically that we bind ourselves, that we create karmic weight and drag and suffering for ourselves and others. And so in that way, they bring our attention to these very specific ways of acting, of being, and then how to transform those. And so each of these great precepts has a kind of a stopping, a ceasing action, and then a coming forth. Having ceased what is harmful, how do we move forth into what is beneficial? So the first of the great precepts is to affirm life, to not kill. So this is a fundamental matter, that all forms of life are living. They're alive. Even inanimate objects. They're complete within themselves. They are in harmony with their environment. Human beings are the only ones who struggle with this. But we too are made of the same stuff. And so to have life as a human being is to have the opportunity to be good, to generate benefit for others. It's the heart of the Bodhisattva path to affirm life, to be affirming of all that is life, and to be relinquishing what is destructive of life. And so, of course, killing, taking a human life, and to be very conscious and awake to when we take the life of other human forms. That's why Oryoki is one of the most elaborate liturgies we do, which is just breakfast and lunch, right? Because we're wrestling with that fact that as a living being, we take living life to live. So how do we do that responsibly within these vows? The basic nature of all things is to not harm, right? So then why is there so much anger and hatred and violence? Every creature is complete within itself, covering its own ground. It has its own virtue, its own life, its own contribution to make. To take that life away is to steal away that opportunity. And to not kill is to not harbor the mind of killing, of destroying life. Dogen says, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill. Will you vow to affirm life and to not kill?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
The second precept is to be giving, to not steal. In a way, giving is life, life is life, giving is life. Our purpose really in life is to give, to be generous in all ways. Without giving, we become very isolated. We wall ourselves off, our lives become smaller and more impoverished. We get caught within a self-created sense of separateness. In giving, our mutual and essential codependence becomes clear and manifest and is self-healing. And so this precept is really about cultivating a non-grasping mind. To not seek contentment or happiness ultimately through things, through power, through titles, positions. To cultivate a mind of generosity rather than attachment. And which means to not believe that we are somehow fundamentally insufficient, incomplete, that will be filled by something from the outside. Dogen said, the mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Will you vow to be giving and to not steal?
I vow to be giving. I will not steal.
And as I mentioned earlier in the week, so this precept is about taking what doesn't belong to us. And so although the precepts are based in emptiness, that nothing abides in any permanent state or autonomous, independent of everything else, everything arises dependently, causing conditions. And yet at the same time, these precepts manifest in the world of things and objects. And so it recognizes that social conventions are that this belongs to you and this belongs to me. And that if we violate that, right, then we are transgressing the precept because we're going to create conflict. If we attach to it, we are also going to create conflict. So how to recognize, in a sense, that property, the belongingness of things to ourselves and others without attaching to it. The third precept is to honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. And by body, we mean the physical, the intellectual, the emotional, the historical, the Dharma body, the Buddha body, the whole body. To honor that whole person and not misuse sexuality. Desire is present within every living creature. It's very present within us. And sexual energy is a very powerful energy, right? And it has the power to do tremendous good, to bring forth love, manifest love, to bring us closer, to show affection. It can also cause deep, deep wounds. But it can also heal those wounds when we use it well. It can separate us. We can separate someone from their body and mind and objectify them. And so it's about not separating ourselves from ourselves, ourselves from others, to not reduce a person to any one characteristic, and to use this desire to bring us closer, to use it well. It's like the Buddha. Buddhism recognizes we have so much power within us, so much influence, right? A single person can create heaven. A single person can create hell. Dogen says the three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. This is our fundamental state. So, go the same way as the Buddha. Will you vow to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality?
I vow to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
And as I said, you know, it's tricky because, you know, in healthy sexuality, it's pleasurable, right? That's part of how it was created. And so how does that, within our vows, not become solely self-serving, right? But that's true of so many things, right? Many things give us pleasure, give us fulfillment, contentment, you know, even if it's impermanent and fleeting. And so how to enjoy that? Why do we make the altar beautiful? Why do we make our food delicious, right? Because there's nourishment in that, there's healing. We need a beauty in our lives, right? But when we cling to it, it becomes something else. It doesn't become something else, but in our mind, we create something else. The next precept is to manifest truth, to not lie. When we open the Dharma eye, we see that everything is true. Nothing exists within a state of deception by itself. So the way of this path is seeing through all forms of falseness, self-created, other-created, to see to the true nature of things so we can finally be at rest and live in harmony. We live in a time of profound deception. From a Buddhist perspective, this is extremely painful, hurtful, misguided, dangerous, antithetical to who we are, fundamentally. That's why it will never work. That's why it will never work. Whatever the purpose, whatever the intention, it will never ultimately work. So this vow is to have the courage to be truthful, to not be afraid. And within the Mahayana perspective, it means when necessary, because these are not rigid rules, so each of these precepts is to be practiced as they're stated. But if following them as they're stated, in a sense, as a rule, would cause harm, then they go against the spirit of the precept, which is to alleviate suffering. And so sometimes we have to act in a way that seems to go contrary to the precept so that we don't create harm. So to be truthful doesn't mean telling what you think is the truth in every single moment, no matter what, right? It means to be discerning of, is it true and would it be helpful to say this? If it would be hurtful, then to not speak that would be maintaining this precept. To live without deception is to live without regret. It's to live lightly, which is really what the precepts are about, to not be afraid. Dogen said, the Dharma wheel unceasingly turns and there's neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence, realize the truth. Will you vow to maintain truth and to not lie?
I vow to maintain truth. I will not lie.
The next precept is to proceed clearly, to not cloud the mind. So we spend so much time on these seats, meditating, clarifying our mind, right? Cutting through the detraction and all that clouds and veils and obscures and dampens, not just our mind, but our body, our heart, our spirit. And so this is just a central aspect of practice. And so to not cloud the mind traditionally means with intoxicants, with substances, but today it can mean with the internet, with work, with sex, with anything that would actually cloud the mind, would create more, you know, like throw a blanket on the mind's natural clarity. When the mind is hidden, things appear dull. That's why we so often reach for other things. What is easy becomes difficult. What's difficult but can become overwhelming. When we seek to escape, we never succeed, right? We just delay and things get harder. So to not cloud the mind is to just keep turning back to our natural clarity. When we encounter the true self more and more, the desire to escape diminishes, begins to drop away. It's no longer enticing. When we encounter the bright, clear mind, we no longer hunger, actually, for dullness and fogginess. Dogen said, the mind is originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Don't be defiled. Will you vow to proceed clearly, not cloud the mind?
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
This is a middle path. And so I spoke about with you earlier in the week about how, you know, to be with friends or family, you know, to having a drink, for instance, that is a way of loving each other, being together, sharing time together, enjoying that time together. And then to recognize when with continuing it becomes something else, when it is actually bringing people closer, and then when it begins to bring people further away, not only from themselves, but each other. So the intention is paramount within each of these precepts, to really understand your mind. The next precept is to see the perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults. When we see others' errors and faults, we have a sort of a natural tendency to judge, to compare. We need to be able to do this in different relationships, in different jobs. And so the teaching is, when you need to judge another errors and faults, do it to help them, not to hurt them. Do it not out of ill will or anger, but out of compassion and kindness. Be very clear about that. We can never know truly another person's mind. So when we judge a person's actions, we can think we know enough or everything, and to really just have humility. And when necessary to judge, particularly to stop something that's harmful, again, to do that without hatred or ill will, it's challenging, right? It's easy to fall into. I said that one of the most frequent questions I get around these precepts is this one, and usually it has to do with work. Sitting around the coffee, the water fountain, and, you know, speaking in a belittling way of bosses or other colleagues, and how to be a practitioner within that moment to stay true to your vows without being self-righteous, right? It's a living, it's a real thing you're getting into here. Dogen said, in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we're the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. Will you vow to see the perfection, and do not speak of others' errors and faults?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
The perfection is their Buddha nature. That within sort of transcending their actions, our actions, everyone's actions, is a complete Buddha, not yet realized. The next precept is to realize self and other as one, to not elevate the self and blame others. Similar but different. Usually when we're not happy, we're feeling unhappy about something, we look for somebody to put down so that we feel a little bigger, a little better. The sense of a self is a self-creation of a self-clinging mind. The sense of others is the same. And so in every moment, there's just this moment, being born and dying. There's no one to build up. There's no one to tear down. And yet there are positions and ranks. There are titles, right? So from a Buddhist perspective, if we're going to use them, let's use them well. Let's understand their creations, their constructions. There's nothing inherent. And when they're no longer useful, don't use them. In other words, don't be deceived. When there's no longer self-clinging, then we're no longer buoyed up by praise or thrown down by blame. We can learn, we can hear, we can receive. We can benefit from what is true, let go of what's not, within ourselves and others. Trust yourself. The more we trust ourselves, the easier it is to trust others. Dogen says, Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's no outside or inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not a square inch of earth upon which you can even stand. Will you vow to realize self and others one, to not elevate the self and blame others?
I vow to realize self and others as one. I will not elevate the self and blame others.
And just like the other precept, when it's necessary to bring blame to another, to do that, because it will be helpful. To give generously, to not be withholding. So before it was not taking what doesn't belong to you. Here, you have something to give. Don't withhold. We always have something we can offer. Always. To be withholding creates a kind of a cycle of confinement and anxiety, never enough. To give generously frees us from that. We see that it's better to live simply and deeply and without accumulating what is not necessary than to be burdened with what we treasure too much. Now we can enjoy what we have without fear of loss because we know we're already going to lose it. Everything is impermanent. You're just borrowing everything, including this body. To hold on is to already lose what we cling to. To let go is to move in accord with things. Then a gesture, a child's laughter, helping a person across the street, mowing a lawn, can all be giving generously. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Will you vow to give generously, to not be withholding?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
the ninth precept, to actualize harmony, to not be angry. These last three precepts are the three poisons: greed, anger, delusion. Anger can only arise within us as a result of the machinations of our mind and body. No one can say or do anything that makes us angry, that puts anger in us. It's ours. People can act in a way that makes it very easy for us to get angry. Yes, that's true. But the anger that's within us is ours. That's part of the revolution, right? To take ownership of what belongs to us and to recognize that anger is like a burning fire, can burn a house down. But if we use it, if we use that energy, transform it without self-clinging, it can be like thunder. Sometimes selfless, compassionate anger, right, can get somebody's attention, can remind somebody that this life is fleeting, can show them, can remind them that they're in the midst of a moment that they might lose something important, something precious. To live with anger is like living with an illness. And as a bodhisattva, you don't want to live that way. That's the commitment you're making. And so when you find yourself living in a way that is creating that, you remember, it's like, this is not the life that I want to be living. How do I honestly, authentically find my way through this, free of this? And so within anger, we have to become adept at practicing anger, which is compassion. Because when you practice your anger well, you're not acting it out. You're not manifesting it towards yourself and others. Dogen said, it is not regressing, it is not advancing, it's not real, it's not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean, there's an ornamented cloud ocean. He's saying, anger is a real thing, but it's not real in the way we think it is. It's an illusion that has impact. Will you vow to actualize harmony? Do not be angry.
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
So the affirmative side of all of these precepts is, when not being angry, to live in a way that is bringing forth harmony. When not being withholding, it's not enough just to stop that, but also to move forth with generosity. The tenth of the great precepts is to experience the intimacy of things, to not defile the three treasures. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are the body and mind and heart of all beings, of you yourself, of your path, of Buddha Dharma. When we turn against the three treasures, we turn against our own home, our mind, our practice, and others. To take refuge in the three treasures is to come closer. So when your practice wavers, take refuge. When your practice is strong, take refuge. Make it an active, ongoing part of your practice. Let it come alive. Refuge is a very potent word, right? You asked, is it like finding safety? Not in the sense of escape, but in the sense of turning towards something that will provide you with a way to live within a kind of safety in a life in which there is danger and adversity. So it's not a bubble, it's not a protective cage, but it's a way of being. Dogen said, living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to this ocean of reality. You should not comment on them, just practice them. You should not comment on them, just practice them. Realize them and actualize them. Will you vow to experience the intimacy of things and not defile the three treasures?
And I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
What Dogen is saying there is that within our speaking of the Dharma, understand its words. So comment and then know when to stop. These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts and the 10 great precepts were handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha over these many, many generations to my teacher, to myself, and now I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Buddha's robe. This is the blood lineage. Tracing our lineage from here today all the way back to the Buddha. The mountains and rivers order. This is to certify. Sorry, I'm going to have to take that back from you. Rami should come up first. Okay. I'll get to you later. This is your bitter up. Come here. Yes, this is correct. The Kichmyaku. Okay, mountains, rivers, order. This is to certify that Rami Eskelin, having fulfilled the precepts, training requirements of Zen Mountain Monastery in the mountains, rivers, order, has on this ninth day of November 2025 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Roksu, and has been given the Dharma name Dokyo. Blood lineage. The mountains and rivers order. This is to certify that Shushravra Raghunath, having fulfilled the precepts, training, and requirements of the mountains and rivers order, has on this ninth day of November received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Roksu, and the Dharma name, Jigo. that lineage. This is to confirm that Josh Dittmar, having fulfilled the requirements of the Mounts and Rivers Order, has on this ninth day of November received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Tokoman. The ancestors. The Mounts and Rivers Order is to confirm that Robert Pyle, fulfilling the Mounts and Rivers Order requirements, has on this ninth day of November 2025 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Kyobu. List of the ancestors. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Joshua Weiner, having fulfilled the training requirements, has on this ninth day of November received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and the Dharma name Musho. Everyone, please, Gosho. Choki. Everyone, please, Gosho. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. And now the Jisha will lead these five bodhisattvas around the Zendo. As they pass you, they'll be in a bow, and if you would just return their bow, it's a way of the Sangha acknowledging and rejoicing in these students having received these precepts. Thank you. You know, an important part of this receiving of vows is that it's done together publicly, so that, I mean, both, so that we can share in this together with everyone, but also, you know, it changes the quality of the taking of these vows from being something that is very personal and private, which it definitely is, to being something that's larger, more public, something that is held within the whole Sangha. And in that way, it binds us together in a really wonderful way. It also sort of helps us to hold our commitments to each other. You know, that these vows are given and received very explicitly. You know, there's nothing suggested or vague in this. The precepts themselves are not directive. They don't tell us what to do. Buddhism doesn't really work that way, right? It brings us into the deepest parts of our mind and our consciousness and our heart and our being and our longing, and shows us what is true and helps us to see what is not true and gives us a basis for living so we can work things out on our own, which is kind of what we have to do. We have to work things out on our own and with a lot of help and support. But we come back to that essential nature of taking responsibility, which is very empowering, right? And in those moments when we are meeting something that we feel like we're not ready for or up for, these vows sort of invite us, demand of us that we are ready. We just need to look carefully and inquire and take a leap. I mean, in a sense, nobody's ready for anything they haven't done before until they're doing it. And that's how we learn. So before we finish, let me just say a few words about your names. So in our tradition, we receive a name when receiving the precepts, which is taken from Chinese characters, which is really how the Zen tradition came into being, from its Indian roots. And then the pronunciation, we honor our Japanese tradition with a Japanese pronunciation. So Rami, your name is Dokyo. Do is the way, the road, the path. It's the Do of Doshinji, Temple of the Way of Reality. It was the Do in Daido's name, the way of the Great Way. It is the path that is to be practiced each day. It is also the path that is in every step, perfectly manifest and embodied. It is the Eightfold Path. It's the path that guides your aspiration, and it's the path that fulfills that aspiration. All together, all at once. Kyo is deep respect and reverence. Bodhidharma says, taught that to venerate the Dharma means to have reverence for your true self and to be humbled, to have humility with regards to your delusions. And so to have respect and reverence for your Buddha mind, for the mind of others, for selflessness, for compassion, to have humility for the strength of our attachments, your attachments and false views, and to cultivate that reverence for people, for living things, for inanimate things. This kind of reverence, this reverence is clear. It's simple, it's grounded, it's earthy, right? It's not an idealized or romanticized notion of sacredness. It's very alive. In a sense, every living thing has a natural reverence for for its world. And this reverence arises naturally within us, in a sense, quite innocently, when we practice well, when we live well, when we dissolve the sense of distance of high and low, inside and outside. And so this name is to have respect for your grasping mind and your karmic impulses, but also have reverence for your practice and liberation, for your vows themselves. Dokyo, the way of reverence. Shushravya, your name Jigo. Ji is to have love and compassion for something. And compassion, remember, is not just a feeling of empathy, but it's actively wanting to love, to have compassion, to alleviate suffering, to help. Our attachments and long-held views, beliefs are strong, right? They're demanding. That's why we get caught in them so much. They seem to assert themselves as though there's something, a force within us, right? They demand attention and obedience. And so we practice to our mindfulness to be able to hold our stability in those moments and see what's actually happening, make good choices. Compassion is free from any fixed form. Sometimes it's gentle, sometimes it's tough. It can be very accepting, sometimes it's firm. It can be very focused, it can be very expansive. The love of the Bodhisattva is a natural desire for everyone to be free of suffering, of pain, of confusion, of worry, and it responds without a desire for reward or recognition. Compassion is its own fulfillment. It can be practiced and cultivated. It can arise spontaneously without knowing. Go is strength, a spiritual power, a kind of natural splendor. It's your Buddha nature's boundless love. It's your sky mind. It's your cloud body. It appears as a gentle rain, as a strong winter wind. It's this strength, this spiritual power is always within you. It's what got you here, whether you know it or not. It called and you listened. It's always present. It's always shining. It's always complete. It's always true. We just have to listen and discover it again and again. So Jigo is to have love and compassion for your own virtuous qualities, for your own spiritual strength. As you bring out your light, you'll bring out the light in others. Jigo, compassionate strength. Josh, Tokuman. Toku means sincere, earnest, but also has a quality of kindness and virtuousness. True sincerity is like a beacon in the world. That's why when we see so much insincerity, it's like an illness, right? It makes us suffer. Real sincerity is like a beacon. It's honest. It's forthright. The Buddha encouraged us to be heedful, sincerely heedful, to be earnest in our practice, to be kind inside and outside, to manifest non-harming. When you're sincere, humility will also be there. They go together. And then we're able to accept what's difficult to accept, to see what's difficult to see, to practice what sometimes is very difficult to practice, right? Because sincerity demands that. It's more important than whatever, in a sense, we might be struggling with. Mon, tokuman, is to inquire, to question, to examine, to want to know at the deepest level. Buddha Dharma thrives on this. It reveals its greatest treasures through inquiry. But you can't be made to question. That can't be forced. It has to come from within. It has to arise from within us, from our own inner yearning and longing. And that comes and goes. Nothing is permanent. So sometimes it's very strong. Sometimes we have to find it again, cultivate it. It can be cultivated. It can be like a great wind that clears away all the clutter. It can be so subtle that you hardly notice it. appreciate your mind's natural desire to understand clearly. Tokamon, sincere inquiry. Robert Kyobu. Kyo is unborn. It also is the character that is used to refer to a sutra, which means an unbroken thread, something that is continuous. Enlightenment is to realize the unborn nature of mind. It is unborn and undying. It has no beginning and end. It's a seamless temple. It's a flowering bush. It's a shit stick, Yunmen said. It's your body and mind. It's always here, Kyo. It's always immediate. It's always timely because it's free of time. It's always in accord because it has no resting place. To realize Kyo is to realize liberation. Bu is dance. To dance is to move to the rhythm of your basic elements, your warmth, your flowing waters, your wind currents, your miraculous body. It's to sense and be in contact with sound and sight and taste, smell, touch. A bow, the posture of the Buddha, agasho, an embrace, to laugh, to cry, to speak, to listen, dances. Moving in and out of a formless body, meeting the needs of whoever appears. Dance the unborn, Kyobu. And finally, Joshua, Kyobu, Musho. Mu means dream. It's not the mu of negate of the koan. You thought it was, right? I could see that in your eyes. This is a different character, to dream. Is it real or is it unreal? Does it mean something or is it meaningless? Is it trustworthy or not trustworthy? It's a dream. We dream at night and we realize our mind is doing something. It's real. We take it as real. We react. We wake up. We realize it was my mind. The Buddha said, this is just like that. If we take the dream as self-existing, in and of itself, that's all there is, then we will always be distant and apart and anxious. If we deny the dream altogether, then we turn away from the world. The dream, sho, is to shine on, to illuminate, to radiate light, as in moonshine. Not this moonshine. We already dealt with a precept that handles that. To illuminate dream. How do you awaken from a dream while dreaming? How do you see the dream while dreaming and know it's a dream? How do you shine the bright light of your natural mind onto this dream and to the dreams of others? How do you awaken yourself within the dream? By dreaming. And when that dream is awakened, how do you dream a dream of enlightenment, of compassion, of fulfillment, of no suffering? To illuminate the dream, Musho. Before I just offer some concluding words, because these will be my last chance to speak, I want to first thank Bill for your generous. People kept coming back and saying, he won't stop. He won't even take a break. So we so appreciated your teachings this weekend. You have an open invitation. I was already planting seeds with something we might do. I'm waiting for him to retire, because when you know people retire, they don't have anything to do. So thank you so much for coming. And I also wanted to mention, just remind everybody that tomorrow, Shoan will be beginning a Dharma transmission, Shiho, and which is completely in private. You know, it's interesting that becoming a student, Jikai ordination, You know, these are all very public, very sangha-rich passages. And transmission, the very end of training, is completely private. It's just really between the teacher and the student and an attendant. And there's something very beautiful about that. And so that'll be happening all week, and mostly in the Buddha Hall, and culminating on Saturday night and some other things on Sunday morning. But on Sunday at this time, there'll be a Taisho. We'll just do the normal Sunday morning. But it'll be an opportunity. I'll give a talk, and maybe Sean will offer some words. And it'll just be a time when the Sangha is all here, and we can just celebrate this new plum dropping off the tree. I already made sure your dad was going to be here. I asked him. I meddled. You have entered into the profound implications of a life dedicated to both awakening yourself and others to manifesting true compassion. There is no rule, and no rule is neither a rigid nor relativistic morality. When it's not clear how to move forward, it's not because the precepts themselves are ambiguous or ambivalent, but it's just not clear to us. That's all. They are always there when you turn to them. They will always guide you when you turn to them. There's nothing that is outside of them, but we have to turn towards them. They arise from the fundamental nature, your Buddha body. They have been given to you today and received by you in the presence of all of these important people. So you have made your vows, and now every day you make them again. Every day you make them again, both in your liturgy, but also in everything you do. You wake up to them. You go to sleep within them. That's the nature of a living vow. That's how we've gotten down here thus far. And so practice these vows. Let them help you to meet your life, to transform your life, to be a positive influence on others. When you are happy, when you are at peace, when you are living well, you know who benefits from that? All of us, everybody. So be generous with your vows. May your life go well.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.